This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, this is the evening edition. Caroline Anuma with you. It's 6:38 in the evening. Our next story takes a look at the Dewan Negara, particularly because a BN senator has said today that he would not block or vote out bills proposed by Putrajaya for the sake of being an opposition lawmaker in the upper house.
Yep, so some reassurances coming from that quarter, I guess, because of the discourse surrounding the composition of Dewan Negara, right?
Yes, correct. So this was by Khairul Azwan Harano. He's more popularly known as Azwan Bro. He's the UMNO Youth Vice Chief, and he is vying for the wing's top post in party elections on June the 30th.
Right, so this is the current state of play. Despite Pakatan Harapan winning federal power in the elections, Barisan Nasional still actually has a majority in the upper house.
That's right.
A majority of members, in fact, were appointed by current Pakan MP, Dato' Sri Najib Razak, and some of these senators have varying expiry terms.
Correct.
What they're serving, rather.
But they cannot be... Exactly. But they cannot be sacked, right? Mm. So they either have to resign freely or disqualified for some reason. Just to give you some numbers, the Dewan Negara has 70 senators, of which 44 were appointed by the King on the advice of the Prime Minister, previous Prime Minister, and 26 others elected by the respective state legislative assemblies for the post, right?
Yep, and this has really changed since 57, right? Back then, we had 28 elected, 22 appointed. And then in the 70s, I think it moved as well. 26 elected, 42 appointed. 2001, we've had 26 elected, 44 appointed, and that's what we've stuck to. And I guess based on that ratio, naturally, questions surrounding democratic legitimacy.
Yes, correct. So the I guess it's a popular belief that the role of the centre in the Dewan Negara is usually to vote along party lines.
There is that perception out there, but I mean, what are they really? They're meant to be the highest order of check and balance.
Exactly.
But historically, how has that played out? You know, I think very few Dewan Rakyat bills have actually been amended.
Mm-hmm.
In spite of how controversial they've been. You know, they famously passed 15 bills in 2 days, I think.
Correct. Also, I mean, just looking back recently at the last parliamentary sitting, right? I mean, we've got the fake news bill, for example, and you know, even the redelineation bill. And when we look at all of these situations, as soon as it passes the Dewan Rakyat, it's almost a foregone conclusion, right?
Yeah.
That it's going to get through the Dewan Negara.
So that's the thing, right? Some critics have suggested that the ineffectiveness of Dewan Negara means that it has no place in a modern democratic institution. But I think with reforms, though, it could be very valuable.
No, I think you're absolutely right. It has a role to play. And I think all of these institutions were set up with that check and balance in mind. Dewan Negara, Dewan Rakyat, the monarchy, all of these systems, if you will, have a role to play. However, it has been abused from time to time. And I think therein lies the problem. In an ideal situation, they should actually work as they're supposed to.
Yep, that's right. So how are they supposed to work? They're supposed to be making and revising laws. There's supposed to be federal and state representation in there. Also sectoral representation, I think, for minority groups, marginalized communities. They're supposed to be examining policies, keeping the executive in check. You know, they're meant to be that all-important second chamber, you know, meant to provide mature, non-political consideration.
Absolutely. We're going to cross over now to constitutional lawyer Niu Sin Yu. Sin Yu, thanks very much for being with us on the evening edition. Briefly, what role is the upper house supposed to play if interpreted according to the spirit of the constitution?
In Malaysia, we have a bicameral parliament. This means that the parliament is divided into two separate houses, the Dewan Rakyat and the Dewan Negara. The power to make laws is exercised by bills passed by both the Dewan Rakyat and Dewan Negara. The upper house acts as a check on the lower house, where a bill originates from the lower house. So that is the spirit and the intent of the constitution in relation to the functions of the upper house.
Right. Sinyu, there's been a lot of criticism over the effectiveness of the upper house and its composition. So from what we understand, the idea was to have a higher ratio of elected senators to appointed ones. So today, 44 out of 70 senators in the upper house were appointed rather than elected. How did we get here?
Yes, you're right in saying that there's been a lot of criticisms on the functions and the powers of the upper house. And this, like you have rightly pointed out, lies in how the members of the upper house is appointed. Currently, the upper house consists of 70 members. Two members are appointed by each state. Because there are 13 states, that makes it 26 members. Four members are appointed by the Yang Di Pertuan Agong to represent the federal territories. And 40 more members are appointed by the YDPA. And those members appointed by the YDPA shall be persons who, in his opinion, have rendered distinguished public service or have achieved distinctions in their professions. These members should be representative of the racial minorities or of origins. But the problem is that the Yang Di Pertuan Agong acts in accordance with the advice of the Prime Minister. So even though the appointment is made by the Yang Di Pertuan Agong, it is, in fact, the Prime Minister that makes the decision. This becomes problematic because the Prime Minister is a person who commands the support of the majority in the lower house. But at the same time, because he decides on the appointment to the upper house, he would be able to control the upper house as well. And this is a systematic problem which makes election in Malaysia a zero-sum game. There is too much power vested. The function of the upper house as a check and balance is eroded. And as a result, when certain draconian bills are passed by the lower house, we see the upper house acting as a rubber stamp. Have they act as an effective check on whether these draconian bills passed by the lower house is something that is good for the country, something that is good for democracy.
Right, and we've seen this happen over the years, with the most recent case being the anti-fake news bill. It was passed through Parliament quickly and without amendments. How should we be thinking about the upper house and its role in providing that much-needed check and balance?
Because we have a bicameral parliament, the upper house should have the powers or greater powers that they currently have to block the passing of a bill if the house, the upper house, is of the opinion that this bill should not be passed. But currently, we only have an upper house which is capable of delaying the passing of a bill. The lower house may still present a bill to the Yang Di Pertuan Agong, even if the upper house does not agree with the bill. And we need to look into the reform of the upper house. Having an elected upper house with the powers to reject bills instead of merely delaying it, and that is the function and the spirit of having a bicameral parliament.
Right. Sinyu, there are calls for the BN senators to resign. DAP and past heavyweights are saying that voluntary resignation would be morally appropriate. Now, is that necessarily a fair argument, given that these senators are supposed to be performing their duties in a non-partisan manner anyway?
I don't think that the BN senators should resign. Otherwise, we have one government that is in control of both houses. And that is not good for democracy. Senators are appointed for a term of 3 years with a maximum of 2 terms. And they're not affected by the dissolution of parliament. So a senator remains a senator unless he or she is disqualified or resigns. What I think the BN senators should do is to play the role of an effective and responsible upper house that will scrutinize the bills passed by the lower house. It's time to step up from being a rubber stamp.
Yeah, you spoke earlier about the need to reform Dewan Negara so that the government doesn't have complete control over both houses. What needs to be done to initiate that sort of reform?
It requires a constitutional amendment. And I think it is in the current opposition's interest to have such reforms as well. For the greater good of democracy, the current government and the current opposition should work together to decide what areas of the constitution, based on the current topic that we have, the reform of the upper house as being part of the constitutional reform that we can agree on. I don't think the current opposition should block an amendment to the constitution because they it needs 2/3 majority. They shouldn't block the amendments just for the sake of blocking it. A lot of the reforms that is being pushed by the government is actually quite necessary, and it's long overdue. And from an opposition's perspective, there is currently too much power vested in the current government, in the Prime Minister. So it is in their own interest as well to have these powers distributed or devolved.
Right. So if Dewan Negara were to be reformed and the senators elected rather than appointed, who would do the electing?
Well, that's actually a really good question. But I know this might sound contradictory to what I've said earlier. But you already have an elected House of Representatives. And some would argue that it would be a waste of time to have another elected house because the same people would be voting along party lines. So in effect, you would end up with the same result of having two houses controlled by one party. So we could perhaps move into a system like the United States where you don't see one party controlling both houses, but they have their own set of problems. A lot of the bills that is being pushed by the lower house is being blocked by the Senate. So you have a standoff between the upper house and the lower house, and nothing could effectively be done.
So based on the Senate's previous voting patterns, do you think that there are any policy initiatives that won't pass the present Dewan Negara?
The voting pattern of the upper house in the past has always been one that is very consistent with whatever the government of the day pushes. Assuming that the membership of the upper house remains unchanged, and if we assume that voting will be based on party lines, the present government will not have a straightforward path to enact new laws. In a way, that is good, because passing new laws should not be done in haste. However, certain initiatives by the new government, which involves the passing of a bill, for example, the abolishment of the Anti-Fake News Act, if opposed by the upper house, that could take longer than expected.
Right. Sinyu, I'm just wondering whether or not we should expect parliamentary gridlocks and whether or not those will be difficult to resolve.
I think there would be parliamentary gridlocks, based on the two assumptions that I have mentioned earlier, that the membership of upper house remains unchanged and voting is based on party lines. Whether that would remain unchanged, well, to be honest, this is politics. We see parties leaving Barisan Nasional and we see a switching of allegiance all the time. So I don't think it's in my place to be able to predict what may happen.
Fair enough.
But if all things remain equal, yes, there will be a gridlock.
Thank you very much for that, Sinyu. That was constitutional lawyer New Sinyu weighing in on the role that the Dewan Rakyat is supposed to play and how, in his opinion, it can be more efficient. What are your thoughts about the Dewan Rakyat? Do you care what happens in the Dewan Rakyat? Call us on 03-77-10-9000. Sorry, I meant to say Dewan Negara, not Dewan Rakyat. We're talking about senators. We've got JC on the line. JC, thank you for patiently holding. What are your thoughts about the Senate?
Actually, I just want to add a bit. It has been spoken by the previous constitutional lawyer. I think that I will add a bit. Upon the dissolution of Parliament, I think both houses should clear off, not just the upper, the lower house. All should be clear off.
All should be cleared off, did you say?
Yeah. Because currently, we can see The whole house is full of political appointees.
Right.
And it would serve only a rubber stamp, which is not good to the administration of the country. I think there should be a total revamp.
All right, JC.
I'm sorry, I couldn't talk for long because I need to Minahari just add in a bit.
That's perfectly right. Thank you so much for your thoughts, JC. Hey, you know, I mean, that may be an interesting reform, right? That the Dewanagara gets dissolved along with Parliament, and maybe that is an elected position as well, much like I guess Congress is in the United States.
Yeah, definitely. Maybe the Wild West,
the Senate and Congress. Mm. Who knows? All right, we've got some music coming your way. We've got Combat Baby Metric after these messages on BFM.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.